So today we have before us first an informational hearing on the University of Minnesota and Fairview. And as members know, that this is really in response to requests from members of the committee. There was that a public hearing at the request of Attorney General Swanson, and for anyone who was at it, you know, that was quite an unusual experience. I don't think I've ever been a part of something that addressed a public merger in that fashion. And so I want to make clear that that isn't at all what we're talking about today. That what we're talking about today is that because our committee has jurisdiction and oversight responsibility for the University of Minnesota within our budget area, it's important for the members of the committee to understand the university's mission, the threats to the university's mission as defined by the university and the Board of Regents, and really understand what the people of Minnesota expect and are looking for from the University of Minnesota Medical School and its partnership with Fairview. So we asked both the university and Fairview to come be with us today and just share a little bit about their enterprise. Tell us about their facilities, about their long-term goals, vision, mission, challenges to achieving those, and anything that we might do to be helpful. It is our commitment to support the university and Fairview in fulfilling their mission to be world-class. So with that being said, I think what I'd like to do is begin with the University of Minnesota. And we have Dr. Aaron Friedman here, who's the Dean of the Medical School and Vice President for Health Sciences, as well as Dr. Bobby Daniels, who's Vice Dean for Clinical Affairs, Medical School, and CEO of the University of Minnesota Physicians. And we thank you so much for being willing to be with us today, and for being patient with our floor session. So I don't know who's going first, but whichever.
I think I'll start. Thank you, Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Dr. Friedman.
Thanks for the opportunity to have a chance to discuss our academic health center and the medical school and our clinical operations and our relationship with Fairview.
And could you just state your name for the tape?
Sorry. I'm Aaron Friedman. I'm, as you said, the Vice President for Health Sciences and Dean of the Medical School.
Very good.
We have some material that we've provided you, and I'm not going to go through and just read that, but I would like to highlight some of the what's in this material at this time. I do think it's important for everybody to understand that we have been in this type of a relationship since 1997 as part of an affiliation agreement that was signed at that time. And so we have been partners since that time. But I think it probably is useful to realize some of the nature of that partnership and to help a little bit in understanding the Academic Health Center and not just the medical school with respect to that to that relationship. So let me touch on a couple of things. First, who we are as an academic health center and the kind of work that we do. We have almost 6,200 students in the academic health center. We have six colleges: medicine, nursing, pharmacy, veterinary medicine, public health, and dentistry. Most of our students are professional students, but not all. So we actually have a fair amount of undergraduate education that we do leading into those professions and also in helping the rest of the university. We're also a large research institution, and the Academic Health Center has about $400 million of research expenditures a year. Medical school is a really big piece of that, but is not the only piece by any means. Public health, for example, and vet med are fairly sizable research programs. We also have University of Minnesota Physicians, and Bobby Daniels will be talking about that in just a couple of minutes. So the size of that program is also something that I think the committee would may want to know more about. And finally, in the dialogue that's gone on over the last few months, we have had a chance to talk a little bit about what are the sorts of things that are really important in the combination of what we do as a university and with our clinical partners that are essential to being successful now and into the future. So I think maybe I'll touch a little bit on a couple of other aspects of the Academic Health Center and then go right into these issues that we have raised and should raise when we talk about the sorts of questions that one might wonder about with respect to how our clinical partners and how we as an academic institution work together. You may know, but if you don't, we train about 70% of the healthcare workforce of the state of Minnesota. We are the only pharmacy school. We're the only dentistry school. We are the largest advanced practice nurse trainer, and we train around 70% of the physicians who now practice or have practiced in the state of Minnesota. And it's unlikely that that will change very much for the foreseeable future. So what's important for us and what sorts of questions do they lead to? First, we think what the public expects when we graduate somebody is that we can say that this individual can do what you believe they should be able to do. In other words, if we give an MD degree, you want to know that that person can be a doctor. You want to know that the dentist, that person that we graduate from the dental school can be a dentist. We can't do that without actually watching them perform. And so one of the crucial elements in these sorts of professional schools is having practice sites that make it possible to actually see that performance. That is done all over the state, actually, but Fairview is a crucial partner in being able to provide those sorts of practice sites for our schools. We conduct a lot of clinical research, and Bobby's going to touch on a couple of things that are prominent in the news today that are the result of the kinds of clinical research that we perform. That research is crucial to being able to be cutting edge. It's part of why we have the medical device industry that we have here as one example. And again, that clinical research needs a strong clinical partner and one that's engaged with us in facilitating that kind of research. We're the place that people come to when they really need high-end, what I'll call high-end, meaning tertiary quaternary care. That's not a unique model. That's a very typical model. And frankly, in this state, along with the Mayo Clinic, that's really the two places that folks will say, if I've got something that they're not quite sure what's going on, that's where I'm going. And we serve that purpose. And again, our clinical partner has to be part of being successful in that kind of enterprise. And finally, we do use clinical revenue as a way of helping to support the medical school, the dental school, and so forth. So part of what our faculty generates comes back to help in our other missions. So those are all things that make the relationship between the clinical partners and the university crucial. So what does that do? It actually says a couple of things. When we're thinking about partnerships, and if others are thinking about partnerships, we have every reason to ask simple questions related to the kind of patient care that would be delivered and how would we participate. How would we educate our students? Would those students have access to the clinical sites that a partner actually has? How do we meet? How do we develop an interprofessional education program, which is now something that we, as an institution, we've been awarded a grant to be the Center for Interprofessional Education and Model Development for the United States.
Dr. Friedman, when was this?
It was 3 months ago.
Congratulations.
So thank you. We competed with about 20 different places around the country, and we have that center. So not only are we responsible for developing models, we actually ought to be responsible for modeling those models. We have to be a site that's actually doing this. And I think everybody recognizes that interprofessional education and therefore collaborative practice is something that we all are going to have to do in the future in order to meet health care needs, not only of an aging population, but across the board. So that's another place. We're one of the places that is cited regularly for the way that we have integrated with our partners in rural areas to develop programs that give students and trainees access to rural sites and potentially to be a place where people will eventually practice. So we need to know whether our partners are in agreement that those are missions that they share as well. Same thing's true in clinical research. In order to advance clinical research, individuals who work at those clinical sites have to be interested in being part of the research environment as well as the care provision environment. Finally, in what we do, which is at University of Minnesota Medical Center, which includes the Amplatz Children's Hospital, and all of these other areas, oncology, cardiology, and so forth, we need to know whether a clinical partner shares our visions and our missions with respect to advancing that type of high-end care as well. Bone marrow transplant's another example. So as we thought about what it is that we have to do in the future, one of the things that we recognize for sure is we will have to be part of achieving the triple aim in Minnesota. And as we understand it, improve patient health, improve population health, lower cost, and a better health experience. Now, this is a term that's used all over the country, but we should be part of achieving that for Minnesota. We understand that as our mission, and we think that's something that anybody who partners with us should also share. We have been told that we need to, quote, return the medical school to its national prominence. And 30 years ago, the school had a higher ranking in NIH support and was seen as a go-to institution. And we'd love to be able to do that. It's not quite the method for doing that is not the same as you would have done 30 years ago, but we intend to do that. We have to be part of the workforce pipeline. There's no one else who's going to do that. We know that's part of our mission, and the people that we work with and the people that we hire need to agree that that's part of their mission as well. And we've made and are going to continue to make, if we're lucky, considerable advancements in biomedical research. That's part of who we are, and that's part of who we should be. And I think, again, this body and the citizens of Minnesota also agree that that's part of what we should be doing in the future. So as we look at what's going on nationally and as we ask the question about this partnership and so forth, this is not smooth sailing going forward. There are a number of questions that have been raised both at a local as well as at a national level. How exactly will clinical care be reimbursed in the future? What's going to happen to general medical education or the way that we train residents? So you may or may not know that that's a Medicare-based payment and has been under attack for a number of years recently, including suggestions in recent budgets to cut the GME budgets by as much as 60%, but certainly by at least 10%.
Dr. Friedman, will you clarify that?
Sure.
What's the Medicaid?
It's Medicare.
I mean, Medicare part of your
So all of
reference.
Our residents, everybody that we train after they've graduated medical school, and all over the country, there are about 24,000 slots like this, those per year, so that meaning there are 24,000 people enter every year, those are slots that are paid for through Medicare. It's about $6 to $7 billion of direct funding that goes to pay these residents. Mm. So when we hire some, we have about 1,000 residents in all of our programs. The overwhelming majority of those are paid through funding that goes to hospitals and pays their salaries and benefits.
Okay.
So the idea was back in the 1960s, this is a general good attached to the Medicare bill because it was likely to pass. And now that's how residents get paid. Well, as you can imagine, having conversations about reducing the amount that we provide at the same, we being the country, the government provides, at the same time that we're saying there are shortages in doctors, shortages for nurses and so forth, seems to be counterproductive, but we're all going to have to think about how are we going to have these trainees. And in our state, who we train is who winds up practicing here. And in truth, we're exporters of physician talent. We train more people than stay in the state. As hard as we try, and we do a pretty good job of keeping people here, some don't stay. So that's another challenge that is ahead of us. We know that research budgets are being reduced, and sequestration is just the start of that. And we also know that at the end of the day, we're going to have to figure out how to do this better, more cheaply, and in a more integrated fashion. So that's not a small, that's a tall order, but certainly as a university, we're committed to being part of the solution for that. So I think I'll stop, turn this over to Bobby, who can talk a little bit about UMP.
Before we do that, if we just make sure the committee can ask some questions, good. Senator Ortman.
Thank you. Vice President Friedman, thank you for being here today. I'd like to know how and why the university got involved in discussions to buy Fairview Hospital.
So how and why was your question? Okay, thank you, Senator Ortman. Thank you, Chair Bonoff. So the how part is began with a conversation that the president had with the Fairview CEO in starting in December, actually, of 2012. The why is a all over the country, universities that either sold or somehow divested themselves of their healthcare program have been reacquiring them. And in some instances, some have acquired a new healthcare programming, I think for two primary reasons, but the most important one is because of mission. And the desire to be as effective as possible in both the education and research portions as well as in the clinical care. So I think that's the thinking, and it's not unique to our state or to our university.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you. I saw that in your trends discussion in your testimony. I'm wondering, did the university approach Fairview, or was it the other way around?
I'm pretty confident.
Dr. Friedman.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Chair. I believe the university approached Fairview.
And, Madam Chair, was that after the university learned about Sanford's interest in Fairview?
So, Chair Bonoff, it's certainly after because that was in December, and I believe the discussions with Sanford began at Fairview well before. Well before December. This is a new president, and this question of considering this option had come up before in conversations that we had well before Sanford was, that is inside the university, well before Sanford was, well before we had knowledge of it, and actually well before it was likely to have been a conversation.
Senator Ortman.
How far did the university get in planning the financing for a purchase like that? Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure I understand exactly what you mean by how far.
Well, was there, Madam Chair, was there planning going on? Was there a consideration of the cost and how the university would meet the cost of a major purchase like that?
Dr. Friedman. And Senator Ortman, I just want to make sure that you know that I let anybody who is testifying here today know that this was really informational to understand their current situation, that I wanted to make sure that the tone and tenor of our conversation was not taking a position about the business dealings between one entity or another.
Well, Madam Chair, with all
Senator
due
Ortman.
Respect, this issue came up during session, and I had asked that we could have this hearing. I think I've been nothing but respectful in my questions, but I think they're fair questions given the level of funding that this committee has provided. And some questions that have come from constituents about whether the university was seeking funding for a purchase like this. And so I think that it's fair to ask them how far did they get in considering this, and had they given some thought to the costs involved?
Go ahead.
Fitz, before
Mr.
you start.
Mr. Fitzenreiter.
I think it's important, Senator Ortman and Senator Bonoff, I think it's important to recognize this wasn't a purchase. But I'll let Fitz
I understand there was no
that.
Purchase, but there
right.
was
I just
some
want to be sure
conversation
that was
about
a conver-
that.
That was the term you used, so I think that was
Mr. Fitzenrunner.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Richard Fitzenrunner. I'm the CFO and Treasurer at the University of Minnesota. In late January, the president and the university, through the president, gave a vision document to the CEO of Fairview, Chuck Moody, and proposed a variety of concepts in that memo to Fairview. Contained in that memo was a proposal for the university to take, in legal terms, effective control. It was a proposal to look at taking effective control. Of course, there's no, we never got to the point of discussing what that actually meant financially. Bear in mind that there are no shareholders to speak for a nonprofit. So there wasn't, like you think of an acquisition where there'd be money changing hands. I think our concept was at the time that the university would in effect negotiate with Fairview. It would be a proposal in which the board would take effective control. And what that meant was really taking control of their assets and their liabilities. But there wasn't a point at which we ever discussed what that exactly meant in terms of any money changing hands.
Thank you. And one last question, if any of you know. At what point, were there any kind of conversations between the University of Minnesota and the Attorney General and the actions that she took with respect to a hearing?
Mr. Fitzenrunner.
I wasn't involved in any of those discussions, so I can't comment on that.
Dr. Friedman.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff. Yes, we were approached by the Attorney General in, I believe the date was either March 17th or March 18th, in which her office contacted us and said that they wanted to come and speak with us about the and specifically about the Sanford Fairview discussions and what our view was of it. At that point, she had also told us that she had already spoken to Fairview, and so that's the first we heard about it.
Thank you.
And I have some questions for you, Dr. Friedman, not for you, Mr. Fitzenrunner. We had what was called a Google Hangout yesterday.
Oh.
And what that is we we had cameras and were able to talk to students around the state about higher ed. And a group who chose to talk to us, because we put the invitation out pretty broadly, were University of Minnesota medical students. We're part of that Google Hangout. I appreciated their participation. But they brought up a concern over residency slots. And they were saying that they, in fact, felt as though the reason why we're exporters is because we don't provide enough residency slots. And I wondered if you could address that.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff. Yes, I can address it. But so there are, as I said, when people are applying for their internship, there are about 24,000 in the country, in the whole country. Those slots were developed by Medicare and fixed. That number is fixed, and it was fixed in the 1990s.
Hmm.
The ability to be able to manipulate that is very, very small and really depends on others giving up slots. And then there's a kind of lottery, essentially, of whether others can be added. So our students are concerned about that, and the reason across the country people are concerned about it because the number of graduates from American medical schools and schools of osteopathy and graduates who are international medical graduates, some Americans who went to schools abroad and some not Americans who went to schools abroad, exceeds 24,000. There isn't anything that we can do about that.
Well, Dr. Friedman, couldn't we adopt a different funding model and say that residencies would be paid for other than these slots?
So you, when you say, Senator Bonhoff, when you say we...
medical schools.
Oh, okay.
You.
Yeah. So again, let's understand that the payments right now come through Medicare, and they actually go primarily to hospitals. And it's about $7 billion a year that pays for those 24 or so thousand slots. If we were to adopt a system over and above that, and quite honestly, today there are some slots that are paid for either by the hospitals themselves, by hospitals and clinics, or even by medical schools, hospitals and clinics. But compared to the number that would be out there, it's very small. And secondly, we would have a really interesting challenge because those programs are actually not only the number of slots, but they're accredited for certification later on, meaning this. Mm. I'm a pediatrician. When I finish pediatric residency, I have the opportunity to sit for certification from the American Board of Pediatrics. I have to have graduated from an ACGME or completed an ACGME accredited training program to be able to sit for the certification exam. ACGME is the body that oversees general medical education. Mm. So it's not quite – we would probably put a number of students, if we did that, at some risk unless we could get them into the ACGME program.
I understand. And then finally, before we move on, thank you. With regard to your tuition for medical students, they complained about that.
Mm-hmm.
They said that the tuition for the University of Minnesota Medical School is among the highest, and I wondered if you could address that.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff. I can. The tuition for the University of Minnesota Medical School is one of the highest for public institutions. If we put in all schools, we, quote, don't look so bad, close quote. But at the University of Minnesota, our tuition was sort of the middle of the pack until about early 2000, around in the early 2000s, when we had a 10% increase and a 12% increase, actually coincident with things that changed with respect to support from the state. And so that bumped us up considerably. And since then, we have maintained somewhere between a 2 and 3% increase per year, not too dissimilar from the changes that have occurred at the undergraduate level. But it is quite high. And our other issue is that some state institutions and certainly many private institutions have a much larger scholarship program than we have.
Okay. Any other questions from committee members for Dr. Friedman? Okay. Very good.
Madam Chair, Senators, thank you for the opportunity for us to be here today. What I'd like to do is focus a little bit more for the next few minutes.
Say your name for the record.
I'm Bobby Daniels. I'm the Vice Dean for Clinical Affairs in the Medical School and also the CEO of University of Minnesota Physicians. So I'd like to turn the focus now to some of the more clinical aspects of what we do. University of Minnesota Physicians is the organization through which all of the faculty of the medical school practice medicine. It was formed in 1997 by taking the individual practice groups of the 18 medical school departments and combining them. And that was done to both improve patient care, better manage our clinical operations, reduce administrative costs, and finally, better meet our academic mission and the tie between the things that Dr. Friedman was talking about and how we provide clinical care. UMP is a separate 501c3 that functions under the auspices of the Board of Regents. We have 920 physicians, and we manage and provide physician services really across Fairview, but predominantly at the University of Minnesota Medical Center and Amplatz Children's Hospital, both of which are owned by Fairview. We provide clinic services there and also services in the hospital. As we look further beyond the boundaries of the university campus, we also provide services throughout the Fairview system. These include neonatal intensive care services, ICU services, electronic ICU monitoring of patients that are in Fairview hospitals but in more rural sites, and a variety of other services as well. In addition, we partner with other health systems in town and across the state as well as the Veterans Administration services to help fulfill their clinical needs, in some cases lead programs or manage services. Nearly 80% of UMP's patients come from outside of the Fairview system. And I think that's a demonstration of the fact that we serve the citizens of the state of Minnesota. And that also benefits University of Minnesota Medical Center and Amplatz Children's Hospital. UMP is also a major site for training medical students and residents and for doing clinical research. The faculty, together from the $420 million of revenue that we generate each year, provide over $40 million in direct support to the medical school that is used to meet the academic mission. And what I'd like to do is take the opportunity to just brief you on two examples of how all of this fits together. So you may have read in the Star Tribune yesterday about our bone marrow transplant patients and the innovative way that two of the physicians in that program are attempting to treat a young child who has the misfortune of having two horrible diseases, HIV infection and leukemia. You know, our bone marrow transplant program was developed now probably 20 years ago, is one of the leading bone marrow transplant programs in the country. And the reason that it's a leading program and can do these innovative things is that the laboratories of the faculty generate ideas, generate innovations that can be applied in the very units, the wards in the hospital, where we treat the patients that one of which you read about in the paper. So in addition to the conventional use of bone marrow transplant and stem cell transplant to treat leukemias and other hematologic diseases, there have been significant innovations at the university to treat enzyme deficiency and other types of chronic diseases in children where different proteins, different enzymes can be replaced. Most notably, a fatal skin disease, epidermolysis bullosa, which has garnered the university a great deal of prominence and also is another demonstration of taking research innovations and applying them to a unique clinical environment. So we've done that not only in those types of diseases, but medical devices are very important in the economy of the state of Minnesota. And one of our cardiologists developed a transaortic valve replacement. So it's a mechanism to treat a particular abnormality of a heart valve that used to require surgery. And in fact, the people who needed the surgery often were so sick that they could not tolerate having the surgery. So this type of a procedure enables non-operative repair. His device is being tested in Europe, but because of that connection, we were able to be one of the few centers in the United States to test that treatment in our facilities here. So that's led to a number of Minnesotans being able to have their heart disease treated, have resolution of their symptoms, and that's had very positive impact on them and their families, and is another demonstration of the thread that runs through faculty research, innovation, and application in the clinical environment in which we practice. So thank you.
Very impressive. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senators.
And Dr. Daniels, when you do your work around the state that goes beyond the reach of the Fairview system, you establish partnerships with these hospitals around the state in our rural areas. And how does that work within the confines of your Fairview relationship?
Okay. There are a variety of ways that, Madam Chair and Senators, there are a variety of ways that we work with other hospitals. The medical school has a very innovative program called the RPAP program, which allows students to spend an extended period of time in rural communities, and faculty of a variety of specialties visit not only the students but the preceptors who are providing care in the rural communities, often their family practitioners. In addition to that, our specialists reach out to a variety of different sites across the state. So Hibbing, which is a Fairview site, enjoys a number of our specialists providing services there. But in addition, we visit St. Cloud, Duluth, a number of other communities. And our relationship with Fairview actually acknowledges the fact that we need to serve the citizens of the state of Minnesota, and that is part of our mission. And I think it's mutually advantageous for both the university and Fairview to be able to have this broader reach into the state.
Dr. Daniels, do you have a relationship with the Alina Physicians Group? And I guess that would be the one I'd ask.
Madam Chair and Senators, we actually receive patients from every health system in the state. I mentioned that about 20% of our patients come from Fairview, about 20% are self-referred. That other 60% comes from a variety of different places, including Alina, including Health Partners in Park Nicolet, Health East, all of the health systems in town, as well as across the state. And in addition to how we receive those patients, how we try to serve the physicians in those systems, we actually provide services within those systems as well. So the orthopedic trauma services at Regions are actually done by faculty from our Department of Orthopedic Surgery. TRIA, which is originally a Park Nicolet program, was developed because of the vision of our then chair of the Department of Orthopedic Surgery. He remains a faculty member and is the CEO of that organization. So those are just a variety of examples of how we interact throughout the Twin Cities as well as the state.
Any other questions from committee members? So in terms of your challenges and your obstacles going forward, it sounds like you've identified just your commitment to continue to be world-class research leading and some of the challenges economically as well as just the construct of your model. And so those are the things that will drive the decision-making as you go forward.
Senator, yes, that's correct. And if I could add one more thing, because we have this reach throughout the state, one of the things that could be and probably will be an issue is can we continue, especially with students and trainees, can we continue to, in effect, rely on the rest of the state to be part of our training and part of our mission? I think that's a mutually beneficial arrangement. It has been for 25 or 30 years. But as it gets a little bit tighter, meaning a little less funding for clinical care, a little less funding, and students have different tuition needs and so forth, we have to partner. So an example is our nursing program. Our nursing program needs clinical sites as well. Unlike in medicine up until now, but likely to occur in the future, in nursing, there's a direct challenge from programs outside the state of Minnesota, but in the Midwest, and including programs from outside the United States, who are reaching out to different sites and asking whether they can place their trainees in this site. And so I think one of the other challenges we're going to have is the ability to have enough clinical sites to train who we're teaching right now, let alone expansion.
Thank you. And Senator Sheeran, you had talked about that earlier. Well, thank you very much for joining us today and for sharing your testimony with us.
Thank you, Senator Bonds.
So now we'll ask the Fairview folks to come. And we've got Mark Hansberry, Dan Fromm, Trudy Trisla, and Carolyn Wilson. And you're all welcome to come to the table at the same time. Mr. Hansberry, you first.
Good afternoon, Senator Bonoff and members of the committee. My name is Mark Hansberry. I am the Senior Vice President of Strategy and Business Development for Fairview Health Services, which is based here in the Twin Cities. I'm here today with Carolyn Wilson, the President of the University of Minnesota Medical Center, Dan Fromm, our Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, and Trudy Trisla, our General Counsel. It's a pleasure to be with you all this afternoon. and I appreciate the opportunity to join you today to discuss the Fairview University partnership. While I'll focus most of my comments on our partnership with the University of Minnesota, I first wanted to spend just a few minutes providing some context to the broader Fairview organization. It seems that some key aspects of our history, our core mission, and our economic viability have been lost or misconstrued in recent weeks. Let me start by affirming that Fairview has been part of the Minnesota landscape for more than 100 years, and we remain a strong and vibrant organization. Within Fairview, we found the recent speculation about our viability a bit puzzling because our performance measures showed good progress last year. We are improving clinical quality and patient experience, even setting organizational records in patient satisfaction last year. We are using our resources more efficiently and effectively, and we are growing. Today, Fairview is in a position of strength, which is good for our patients, our communities, and the state of Minnesota. Fairview's contribution to the state dates back to 1906, when Norwegian Lutheran immigrants set out to build a hospital in the Riverside community of Minneapolis. They saw a health need and came together to meet it. Commitment to health and well-being, partnership and community remain important elements of who we are today. From those beginnings, Fairview has evolved into the second largest health system in the Twin Cities with more than $3 billion in annual revenues. Our fully integrated health system includes six hospitals in Hibbing, Princeton, Wyoming, Edina, Burnsville, and Minneapolis. In those and many surrounding communities, we have more than 40 primary care clinics, I wish it was 400, primary care clinics and hundreds of specialty clinics, pharmacies, home care and senior services, and more. From prevention of illness to the treatment of the most complex medical conditions, our entire team is committed to providing exceptional care. To carry out our mission, we employ more than 20,000 people across the state of Minnesota and partner with more than 3,000 physicians, including the members of the faculty from the University of Minnesota. The cornerstone of Fairview's nonprofit mission is improving the health of the communities we serve. That mission extends to serving those who cannot afford health care and to supporting programs and services to reach where traditional health care cannot. Our programs, many of which have been nationally recognized, range from health education and school mentoring programs to providing free screenings and flu shots to under- and uninsured people in our community. Our commitment to our communities and track record of investing in their health is one of the reasons Fairview was interested in formally partnering with the university when the opportunity presented itself more than 16 years ago. In the mid-1990s, the University of Minnesota Hospital and Clinics, like other academic medical centers across the country, was facing significant financial pressures, and its very existence was at risk. As a result, the university decided to sell their hospital and clinic assets to a health provider organization, an organization with demonstrated operational healthcare expertise. This would allow the university and the medical school to focus on its core mission of research and education while also restoring the viability of the university hospital and clinics. After the completion of a lengthy decision-making process, Fairview was chosen by the university, and we acquired the university hospital and clinics in 1997. We took the acquisition seriously, knowing that it would change the entire Fairview system for the better and could provide significant benefits to all the patients we serve across the state. As part of that relationship, Fairview changed its mission and vision statements to explicitly recognize our partnership with the university. University-associated representatives, including several here today, now serve on the Fairview Board of Directors. Through these governance roles, the university has a significant voice in setting strategy and allocating resources for the Fairview system. The affiliation agreement created a significant relationship and very important connection between Fairview, the university, and the faculty of the medical school. Through the affiliation, we created mutual commitments to advance the patient care and health-related research and education missions of all three organizations. Working together, we were able to stabilize the hospital financially. Thereafter, we've been able to reinvest in our clinical, education, and research missions. These reinvestments take the form of new jobs, clinical technology, improved facilities, and nationally recognized clinical programming. For example, we've implemented an electronic health record, built a world-class children's hospital, and extended university physicians and expertise into communities throughout the state. Since the acquisition in 1997, Fairview has invested more than $600 million in facilities and equipment for our university-branded services. Our future commitment includes contributing toward a $182 million new state-of-the-art academic ambulatory center on the East Bank for University of Minnesota physicians. Our commitment to education and research also remains strong. University of Minnesota Medical Center and Amplatz Children's Hospital are the primary teaching and research sites for the medical school. Annually, we provide resources to support graduate medical education, faculty recruitment, and translational research. We also provide undesignated support to the University of Minnesota Medical School's Dean's Office for further development of academic programs. And despite the recent perceptions that we are at odds and not making progress, we continue to advance new approaches to achieve better results. In fact, I expect a new co-management model for the university-branded asset that Fairview owns and for UM Physicians operations at the University Medical Center will be approved next month. It is not a solution for all the challenges we face, but we believe it is an appropriate next step in our evolution. Fairview and the university have made great strides over the last 16 years to ensure our communities continue to have access to exceptional community-based and academic medicine. However, I believe it is fair to say that both parties feel we have not reached our full potential. We both would like the partnership to yield even greater clinical, research, and educational benefits. In a complex partnership like the one we have, there are many, many things to consider as we strive to improve. Do we have a common vision for the future? Are we organized to be most effective? Do we have the right leadership in place to bring about the changes we'd like to see? Do we have clear and common priorities that ensure our shared success? These questions and others have been and continue to be discussed at the top levels of the university and Fairview. Since entering the partnership in 1997, resources for both healthcare and higher education have become increasingly scarce. Our communities, state, and country are both expecting healthcare and higher education to become more efficient and less costly while improving quality. So it is no surprise that there is dissatisfaction with the level of financial resources available in the Fairview University partnership. The margins in healthcare are simply too slim to generate the resources that may be desired. As in any industry or organization, we are faced with difficult choices about how to invest our limited resources. Fairview's management and board members work together to make these important strategic choices for Fairview. In all that we do, our goal is to support Fairview's mission by strengthening and ensuring the longevity of all the resources for which we are responsible. That includes University of Minnesota Medical Center. Fairview management and governance understand this responsibility and take it very seriously. And no matter how complicated, we remain committed to working through the issues before us. Both Fairview's interim CEO, Chuck Moody, and University of Minnesota President, Eric Kaler, have mutually committed to taking the next step in our partnership, which includes evolving our shared vision for the future of our partnership. As we evolve our vision, it'll be important for all parties to fully acknowledge the rapid pace of change in healthcare and higher education are experiencing right now. What both thought was realistic or right when we signed the affiliation agreement in 1997 simply may not be today. In recent years, our nation has experienced many significant, unforeseeable economic, political, and social challenges. Those all affect our reality going forward. Health reform expectations to improve quality and reduce unnecessary utilization and costs are creating increased financial pressure for all healthcare organizations. The financial challenge is even greater in the academic medical setting, where the clinical enterprise needs to support a growing portion of the education research mission in light of state and federal funding cuts. This new current context calls for new operational platforms, education models, and research priorities to deliver advanced, cost-effective care within expanded networks. The specifics of each of those is the work we have ahead of us. Senator Bonoff and members of the committee, the healthcare landscape is rapidly changing across our country. For a 100-year-old community asset like Fairview, this is not time to stand still. We believe it is time to be a leader to improve quality and reduce cost and to continue the progressive spirit that characterizes Fairview and the state of Minnesota. Given our unique partnership with the University of Minnesota, we have opportunities no one else does in the state to advance new, innovative care models that bridge community and academic medicine. Fairview Management and Governance are committed to and enthusiastic about the potential our partnership holds for the future. Thank you for this forum to discuss these important issues, and I'm happy to answer any additional questions you may have.
Do you have a question, Senator Rutman?
Thank you. I'm so impressed with what you do, and I've taken my family to the hospital there, and I'm just constantly impressed by what you do. So I'm a really big fan of your hospital and your hospital mission. I would like to know if you could just confirm that Fairview is organized as a private nonprofit in Minnesota. Is that how it's organized?
Mr. Hansberry?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, we are a 501c3 private organization.
Thank you.
Mr. Hansberry, what is the board makeup between University of Minnesota and Fairview?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Fairview board is made up of 18 representatives. There are four members that are university members on the Fairview board. Other members, we have at-large members, as well as community representative board members that are representative of each one of the community hospitals that we serve, Edina, Burnsville, Wyoming, et cetera.
Just seems to me that might be one reform in terms of board makeup that might give you some strengthening of the partnership. I just throw that out. You'll obviously make your own decisions.
But. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? There are others who wish to speak to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Fromm? Oh, were you just saying you're here for questions? Well, in that case, could you just share, Mr. Fromm, just some comments about your current financial status? And you shared in your testimony, Mr. Hansberry, that your assets are strong and you're looking good. You know, you read in the paper, we talk about various nonprofit hospitals. I think Senator Lurie left, but I know he's gotten his bill talking about surcharges. Could you just talk a little bit about your financial situation and things we might be interested in?
Sure. Thank you, Senator and Madam Chair. My name is Dan Fromm. As Mark indicated, I serve as Fairview's Chief Financial Officer. We just finished our 2012 fiscal year, and it was an improved year relative to the year prior. A lot of hard work goes into to that results. We saw in 2012 patient volumes and patient demand increase, reimbursement, though, continuing to decrease, which requires strong focus on cost control and management of expenses. And so that's the challenge in our industry in the face of decreasing reimbursement, is to make sure that we use our resources wisely in that regard. Our results for the year, we had, from an operation perspective, a little over $108 million operating margin in 2012. Those resources go to fund and reinvest in our organization. This year, we will have nearly $175 million capital program to invest in advanced technology, new facilities, information technology, and the likes, much of which will go toward the University of Minnesota Medical Center, as well as other facilities that Fairview serves.
And Mr. Fromm, is there any financial participation with regard to, you know, the University of Minnesota Medical School tuition? Is there any way that your support influences the tuition rates? Is there any correlation between that?
Our support is not related to, directly related to tuition levels at the university.
Thank you. Senator Klassen.
Oh, thank you. We heard from the university earlier about residency slots in the state of Minnesota. Could you share with us how many residents you have from the University of Minnesota at your Fairview system?
Yes. So, Madam Chair and Senators, my name is Carolyn Wilson. I'm president of the University of Minnesota Medical Center. We do support residents that are both supported through the federal slots, if you will, that Dr. Friedman raised, and a few others that the hospital has. We have about 100 residents at any given time providing services at UMMC and Amplatz Children's Hospital.
Madam Chair.
Senator Klassen.
Just to clarify, when you say 100 slots, are you saying for Fairview or for the entire University of Minnesota Medical School?
For those that are practicing at the University of Minnesota Medical Center. As Dr. Friedman suggested, the residents that are in our programs do receive educational sites across the state beyond the University of Minnesota Medical Center. We are a primary training site, but they do get other experiences. For reasons, some of them are interested in rural health care. Some need more trauma experience than what we might be able to offer. So there's a variety of educational sites which our residents participate in.
Madam Chair.
Senator Klassen.
Thank you. So at any given time, how many students at the University of Minnesota Medical School are out doing their residency practice?
I'm going to let Dr. Friedman take it. I don't want to give you an incorrect number.
I should have asked that question earlier.
That's right. I don't want to give you incorrect
numbers. And, stay seated there because we have more questions. Dr. Friedman.
So thank you, Senator Klassen and Senator Bonhoff. We have, in our third and fourth year, the University of Minnesota has 230 students per year in each of those years, so around 460 students who are at during that time all over the state. And approximately two-thirds of those are in the Twin Cities and in the environment around the Twin Cities, but at least a third of our students are in places like Duluth, St. Cloud, Hibbing, Alexandria, Bemidji, all over the state.
Thank you.
Is it Dr. Wilson?
No, it is not.
Okay. Ms. Wilson, I'm confused a little bit that you are sitting at the table with the Fairview folks, but your title is CEO, University of Minnesota Medical Center. So, Fairview, could you explain that?
Sure, Madam Chair and Senators. I am a Fairview employee. As Mark suggested here, Fairview purchased the University of Minnesota Medical Center in 1997. So, under the master affiliation agreement, the responsibility for hospital administration is with Fairview. I do work in very close collaboration and partnership with both Dr. Friedman and Dr. Daniels.
And from the Fairview folks, is there anything you'd like to share with the committee that are current obstacles as you look at the potential to fulfill this mission, and is there anything you need from us?
I apologize, Madam Chair. Dr. Friedman asked me to clarify. When I answered at any given day, there would be about 100 residents in sight. That is on any given day, at any given time. So for a given year, we have about 300 residents that are within our organizations. And I don't mean to confuse this any more than I already have. Our residents have duty hour restrictions and those kinds of things. So there's 300 in total, but practicing in our hospital each day at any given time, there's about 100 on our units. And now if you could repeat your question, I would appreciate it.
Ms. Wilson, my question was, can you share with us, do you have obstacles as you look at this partnership?
Sure.
You know, we heard some of the challenges on behalf of the university. I'm sure Fairview has your own challenges as you grapple with this partnership and its future.
Sure. Madam Chair and Senators, there are challenges, but I would say we're excited and working together about the possibilities. I would say that one of the greatest challenges that I have as the hospital administrator, if you will, is to think about not only improving the patient quality, patient experience, the efficient use of resources that we have like any hospital has, but I think deeply about embedding the academic and the research missions as well. That is what sets us apart from other organizations, and we take great pride in participating in those missions with the University of Minnesota. That means, for example, that we partner with the school in embedding research efforts. So beyond some of the great innovations that you heard Dr. Daniels testify to, We work each day, for example, with the School of Nursing, and we look at most effective pain options for our patients, things like that. There are many other examples about how we really try to embed the research and the teaching missions within our practice as well as a hospital administration. Those efforts just mean that we have to coordinate and choose our priorities. To your earlier questions around supporting more and more residents, I mean, it's a choice of how we use the limited resources, as Mark's already testified to advance all three of those missions, the research, teaching, and the clinical work that we do.
I guess Senator Sharon, you're next.
I don't know if there's anything off boundaries for conversation here, because I came in late, so I don't know if there were some parameters that were.
Senator Sharon, pretty much you asked what you want. What I said is that this is an informational hearing, that we weren't going to, probe into their business transaction. But go ahead, Senator Sharon.
I'm glad I asked. In relationship to this integration of those three components, research, education, and clinical service to patient quality care, oftentimes when you talk about it, we talk about trying to integrate and achieve these higher education objectives and research objectives. What would happen? This is an extreme question, but what would happen if you extracted that from Fairview, if you did not have to be worried about residencies and nursing students coming into the clinical area and providing the environment, sort of the petri dish for them to practice in, what would happen to the clinical outcomes or to the patient care in your system?
Go ahead, Ms. Wilson.
Madam Chair and Senator, I guess I would have to just guess, if you will, and an educated guess. From my perspective, coming out of a deep and rich academic mission, I would, I think adding trainees into any of our organizations is a huge benefit. Trainees are very bright, and they question us. They keep us on our toes, if you will, about how and why the things that we do are effective or are not effective. And so from my perspective, I would say a loss of the training mission within the Fairview system would be a loss to patients because we continue to push that envelope, if you will, about what's better. I would also say that as a healthcare consumer, I want that participation of the training mission within the Fairview system because I want to train that next generation of healthcare providers for those of us that are going to need it in the years to come. I think that there's a lot of value to have trainees within the Fairview system.
May I,
Senator Sharon,
just a few questions on the trainees, on the conflict of being able to find an adequate number of slots for training students in all of the medical professions. Do you have requests to have clinical hours in your facilities, clinical experiences from nursing schools and from medical schools outside of the state, and if you do, how do you deal with that?
Ms. Wilson.
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator. We do have requests for schools to place trainees, and I think Dr. Friedman testified that from the Fairview perspective, if you will, we try to accommodate first our partners' slots, our students' trainees from the University of Minnesota. To the extent that we can also place additional trainees, we make those accommodations, and we start first within the state of Minnesota. And so, for example, we have a very close relationship with St. Kate's, which is a traditional or longstanding relationship, as Mark testified, that exists for many, many years. And so we set priorities for the University of Minnesota for trainees, and then we go to other schools within the Twin Cities, the state. And if we can go beyond that, we would, but it's unlikely that we would be able to meet the training needs much beyond that.
So I can take from that, at least in your system, you meet the state's obligations first before accepting obligations from, other states growing their their nursing programs, for example, and then coming over here to look for clinical sites. You set a boundary about that.
Absolutely, Madam Chair and Senator. We do, first and foremost, place trainees from this state, within the state, specifically the University of Minnesota, and then to the extent that we can, others in the state. We would place all of those students to the extent that we can accommodate their training needs before going outside of the state.
And then this is where I might be stepping over a boundary, and you can tell me if this is not appropriate for me to ask. I'd be happy to ask it offline. In the recent conversations about the changing of the relationship of Fairview and the university, changing your place with Samford, what raises my concern is about this critical relationship, and I'm wondering if you think that that would change in any significant way if we had a different arrangement or partnership between the university and another entity.
Ms.
That
Wilson.
Does not have the same kind of commitment to education and research as a part of the motivating factor or mission statement for an organization.
Ms. Wilson.
Madam Chair and Senators, thank you for the question. I would say that the commitment to the academic and research mission within Fairview is stated right in its vision. It is to support the educational and research missions in partnership with the University of Minnesota. And I would say that there were questions that were raised in this early process with the Samford discussions around the commitment to education and research. And I don't think we had answered all of those questions yet in the process, but we were clearly aware of the need to answer those questions.
I'll just,
Senator Sharon,
you know, let you know that as you have your conversations, that that is the most important element for me to be paying attention to, and was back when the agreement was made for the university to sell its assets, is that that was understood that we weren't giving up an asset that we need in order to support the University of Minnesota's responsibilities for educational research in medicine and training. So that's just number one for me.
Thank you, Senator Sharon. Senator Ortman.
Well, and Madam Chair, to that point, I think that public-private partnerships are in everyone's best interests, and I'm glad that the university and Fairview have been working well together. But I don't think that that comes at the cost to the private business being able to engage in its own business dealings. And I'm pretty frustrated that the Attorney General was meddling in the affairs of a private business. And to be fair, I invited her to come to this hearing so she could get the same background that we got today, because I think that her involvement was really overreach and out of line for our Attorney General in relation to the business dealings of a private entity. And I understand the private-public partnership, and there may be some interest in that. I'm sure that the university was well capable of looking out for its interests, especially with its close relationship, without the involvement of the Attorney General. I thought that was out of bounds. But to the university in Fairview, I think it's a great thing that you have a public-private partnership, and I hope that continues.
Senator Ortman had shared those sentiments with me, and so I do think it's important as members of the Higher Ed Committee that people have an opportunity to speak their mind, and I let Senator Ortman know that I wouldn't echo those comments, but I was clear she'd make them. Senator Sharon.
I just wanted to make sure that that is not my message.
Thank you.
About the Attorney General, nor the Attorney General's responsibility to examine the interests of the state in relationship to something as significant as the changes that you may feel you need to make, that we should all be involved in those conversations.
And to that point, Senator Sharon, you know, that is why I accepted the request of Senator Ortman to have this hearing today, because I think as the committee that has responsibility for the oversight of the University of Minnesota and our assets and resources, that we ought to know how it's going. And so I think this is very pertinent and important, and
You know, it's happening late in the session where people's attention is divided, but I'm grateful that we are having this opportunity. And as things change, I hope that you'll let us know early on, and I can promise you we'll treat you with respect and we'll listen, but we'd like to hear, because we think that the success of this partnership and enterprise is vital to the interests of our state and the University of Minnesota. Senator Klassen, did you have something more?
Yes,
go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've had some discussion today about future needs in the medical field here in Minnesota, and there's been some discussion perhaps that we're going to be short on meeting those needs in the future across all elements of healthcare and the aging population and so on. I'd be interested in knowing how both the university and the Fairview system is preparing for that. What are we positioning ourselves so we can meet those needs of the future, and perhaps in doing so, what do you see as some of the major obstacles in meeting those needs?
Mr. Hansberry.
Dr. Friedman there to
yeah, great.
Be moving there.
Maybe I'll start, Madam Chair, Senator, thank you for the question, and maybe I can tag team with Dr. Friedman on this. Fairview started a journey several years ago around population health with our partners from the University of Minnesota, recognizing that, as you indicated, there is going to be a shortage in primary care to be able to address a growing need as we look at the bolus of population that are moving into their senior years and higher utilizing years of health care. Not only does that create a cost dimension for the state, for employers across the country, but it also creates a significant capacity issue relative to our ability to serve those patients going forward. We've actually been doing quite a bit of work around care model innovation within the organization to move our models towards team-based care rather than physician-centric-based care. Teams can take care of a bigger panel size than an individual only can. And that work has actually produced some significant outcomes already in terms of increasing panel size of our care teams in the 20 to 30% capacity creation over the last couple of years. That's going to help us care for more patients going forward, higher chronic disease patients, because we're integrating in our care models pharmacists, we're integrating behavioral care, social work, et cetera, beyond the primary care capacity, and also trying to create connections between primary care teams and specialty-based care teams, making sure that those that are in the primary care setting are relating to the specialty cares providers in a way that ensures appropriate utilization of specialists and management of chronic disease patients going forward.
Mr. Hansberry, is yours a closed doctor system or an open doctor system?
We are, Madam Chair, we are an open system.
And do you foresee continuing to be that?
Madam Chair, yes.
That's wonderful news. Thank you. I don't know, you know, if other members have participated in systems that are closed, it is quite frustrating when you want to see a specialist and you're not able to because the system is closed. It doesn't feel like that's in the best interest of patients. Dr. Friedman.
Senator Bonoff, Senator Klassen, I think I'm going to come out, wind up in about the same place that Mark did, but from a slightly different direction. So we have a responsibility at the university to be part of a pipeline. And we understand that not only once students get to their professional schools, but actually before. And so one of the things we envision is the notion that we have to spend time not only on our campuses, but across the state, helping people, helping students, middle school and high school students, consider the health professions as a career for them. We then have to help those students get into these health professional schools. And I think one of the points your question was going to had to do with enlarging the size of our health professional schools. Am I right about that? Yeah. So, for example, the nursing school is now working to double the size of their advanced practice nursing program. Pharmacy and medicine, I think in particular, have the issue of, as I mentioned, these clerkship needs and being able to have the practice sites that are available. That's not just a number issue. That's also a modeling issue. In other words, if we're going to practice what Mark was talking about, which is a much more collaborative practice over a larger set, a larger team and so forth, that doesn't just happen. We have to help our students see those practices. And to be quite honest, today there aren't that many. Third, the pipelines are very long. So even if today we increase the number of students we had, say, in the nursing school, it would be 5-6 years before they were practicing. In the medical school, it would be 10-11 years before they're practicing. So I think your point, your question is right on. But the issue that we're going to have to deal with is, even if we made some changes, the more important ones are going to be in the practice model more than they're going to be in the number of people who are actually practicing.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, thank you, members, for this discussion, and thank you both Fairview and the University of Minnesota for coming today and giving us your candor, your trust, and your communication.
Thank you, Senator.
Now we've got one bill up before us, Senator Westrum. Senator Westrum has a bonding bill. Senator Westrum, you have not been before our committee before, so we're happy to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you for giving me the second hour of your committee, Madam Chair.
Very funny.
As we've told testifiers in the Economic Development Committee, Environment Committee, as Chair Tomasoni recently told somebody who has brought a 20-minute presentation, and for $1.5 million, he said, that'll only cost you $1.5 million. So
my sentiments exactly.
I will not lose the prospect of this bonding bill over the length of our testimony. And, Madam Chair, if you want, I can begin.
Very good. Please do.
Madam Chair, this bonding request is for some HEPR dollars that would go specifically to the University of Minnesota Morris campus. I have somebody here from the university that can help just give you a real brief background of what this would go for. As we consider bonding requests, HEPR is kind of a generic and a constant that we have, as we all know. But it certainly would be welcomed and appreciated at our campus in Morris, Minnesota. UMM would be potentially in line with some of the requests they have for $990,000. It would go to things like roofs, a replacement of fire sprinklers, improving accessibility to a library bathroom, and items like that. One other quick note I would also underscore is, in our rural communities, these are the type of dollars that the university reassures me and tells me they to the extent possible, they work with rural contractors or contractors that are generally smaller in nature, and these are the size of projects that those contractors can handle and like to bid on. When you get real big buildings and big expensive investments, typically it's beyond what some of the contractors in a smaller town can handle. And so this can really be a win-win for our campuses, but also our rural communities and the business that it can employ in our area. And so with that, maybe I'll let the university offer a few comments and any questions.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, my name is Brian Swanson. I'm with the University of Minnesota Finance and chair the HEPR Advisory Committee, which is the multi-campus committee that gets together to make HEPR allocations between the campuses. So we appreciate the opportunity today to speak on behalf of all the University of Minnesota campuses and the effort and the money that you put into HEPR. It's a great investment in renewing and maximizing the life of the projects you've funded over the years. We allocate money across the system on a formula based on the size of the campus and its facility condition. And so we've been following the same model for many years and work to make sure that each campus gets its fair share of the appropriation. So I have available for questions if you have specific items you're interested in knowing about or the HEPR process in general.
Senator Westrum, this is a separate file number from Senator Stumpf's, who presented his HEPR requests earlier. Is it your belief that Senator Stumpf is aware of this particular HEPR request as well?
Madam Chair, it's my understanding, and I can clarify this, that this is probably part of Senator Stumpf's broader request. I think maybe Brian knows.
So the $990,000, mm-hmm, requested in this bill would be Morris's traditional share of a $30 million HEPA appropriation.
Very good. That's it. My committee administrator was under that impression as well. And committee members, I just wanted to share with you and Senator Westrom with you as well that our role is to send a letter to Senator Stump outlining our priorities. And so sure. I did that. And what I did say is that because it's not a bonding year and because the Senate was so we took a pretty strong investment position this year with regard to our targets in terms of investing in Minsky, the university, and the state grant program, that it was my recommendation that we use the non-traditional bonding year to fund HEPR, and that that's the best thing we can do with our money is just those basic maintenance. And so really to send Senator Stump the signal that that was our top priority. I also told Senator Stump that, of course, if he wanted to fund the additional projects, then we supported the priorities of the systems, keeping in mind geographical balance.
Sure. Well, Madam Chair, I think we would echo those concerns. And as you've noted, HEPR is asset preservation at its best. And if
yes.
The first dollars we spend, as we do in our own lives and businesses, you got to keep up and take care of your own house before you can do additions and add on. And so I would concur with those comments.
Well, very good. Thank you. And you can let Senator Stumpf know that you concur with that, too. And we won't be voting on the bill because we're just laying them over. And as I've said, I have sent a letter to Senator Stump with regard to our committee support for HEPR. Now, if there's any committee member who doesn't agree with that, you're certainly welcome to let me know, and I'll reflect those comments. So I think it was a short meeting.
Thank
Very
you.
Good. And thank you. Brian, is that, did you come down from Morris today?
He's from the main campus, I believe.
Twin Cities campus.
Okay, there's very good. All right. Well, thank you for being here.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So with that, there is no further business before the committee. The committee is adjourned.